So we started having services in November, and fortunately, in July, we probably averaged close to 70. And I don't know how that's happened with finding 70 people in COVID and since COVID. But we're grateful for everybody that we've seen come to church and has gotten saved. And some of the things that I do is probably not your typical person. The things that I do, most churches and most pastors don't do what I do. So anyway, let's go ahead and get started, and then if you got any questions or anything later, you can ask me. My man Kip here, he's got me hooked up with this, so I can, I'm not used to being able to do it through my phone. So everybody knows what this is here. Armin, you want to give it a stab and tell me what this looks like? This is a picture of the beach. So I want you all to imagine that we're going on a vacation, okay? And we're going to pack our suitcases and go on a vacation. Now, what are we going to put in our suitcase? Somebody tell me, but say it loud. What are we going to put in the suitcase? We're going to the beach. What are you going to take with you?
Swim trunks.
Swim trunks. All right. Who would take swim trunks? Yeah, I mean, you're going to the beach. Okay. Or you ladies would take swim trunks and a t-shirt because we're at a Free Will Baptist convention. So you got swim trunks. What else would you take?
Sunscreen.
Absolutely, because we know light skin, you got to put some sun. What else? We got swim trunks and we've got sunscreen. What else are we going to take?
A bag of money.
What'd you say?
A bag of money.
A bag of money. Amen to that. What else?
Flip-flops.
We got some flip-flops. We got some a swimsuit. We got sunscreen. What else we take?
A
what?
A good book.
Who takes a good book to the beach? Exactly. You three. What's that tell you? All right, what else are we going to take? We're going here on vacation. What are we going to take with us in our suitcase?
Sunglasses.
Sunglasses? You got to have sunglasses, right?
You got to have a fishing rod.
What's that?
Fishing rod.
Oh, that would be fun. I'm going with you. All right, somebody give me one more thing. What are we going to take?
A snorkel.
What? Snorkel. I'm snorkeling next week. So, yes. Take your family? You only said that because your wife's sitting with you and nobody else has got their wife sitting on it. My wife's going with me. Did you say something else? All right. So, everybody, we're loading up on a plane, okay? We got our suitcase packed. Everybody knows what we've got because we've talked about it. You get off the plane, and this is where you are. How many of those things we packed in our suitcase can we use here?
Sunglasses.
A book and money.
Sunscreen.
What happened to our swim trunks? Our bathing suit and snorkels. What happened to all those things that we thought we would really use here? We're not able to use them, are we? That's kind of how it was in COVID. We knew where we were in church and we knew the things it took, to have Sunday school and church service. So all those things there we're prepared for. And all of a sudden we wake up one Sunday and we're like this. Now we can still use some of the things, right? But it's so different. Even now, it's different because of COVID. Everybody says, oh man, it's just so different since COVID. It's because we are here now and not at the beach, but we still can use some of those same things. I don't know if you like Socrates, but he said, to find yourself, you got to think for yourself. I'm afraid that we've kind of gotten that mold that we've always been at the beach, that we don't even know how to think for ourselves anymore. Someone told me a long time ago, you need to sit in your office, not just study and not just pray, but allow God to speak to you. Let God speak to you and you start thinking for yourself. What's God directing me to do in my ministry while I'm here? And don't pay so much attention to what everybody else is doing in all the other churches that seem in your mind to be successful and you're the only failure in the world. Because how many of you have been there? Like you see everybody on Facebook lying? Like, man, we had a great Sunday today and the preacher's like, I think I'm going to resign tomorrow. So think for yourself. Now, I don't know how many of you are Alabama fans, but I'm sure everybody knows who this guy is. His name's Nick Saban. No Alabama fans, obviously. They ask him, at the end of this last championship, why are your players always playing so good for you? Like, what's the success? What do you think is happening to these guys, and how are you able to take these guys and do what you do with them? He said, I teach them to be the best version of themselves as they can be. So he looks at these boys and says, quit trying to be this guy, quit trying to be that guy. I recruited you to do what you can do. And I want you to be yourself. You know, I kind of feel like that's how God looks at us. He created me to be myself. He wants me to be the best version of who I am. Now, I can't do things that everybody else can do. Just ask anybody that really knows me. I'm not good at a lot of things, but I want to be the best version of who I am. So I've discovered who I was. Socrates also said, know thyself. And I think that's important. I mean, you need to know God more, but I think you need to know who you are and what your abilities are, what your giftedness is, and build on those things. Be the best you that you can be. So the folks at your church, your family, they'll know that this is what you do. It'd be sad if your church folks don't even know what you do. You know, like, what are you good at? So be good at what you do and work on that. So many people are trying to copy someone else's vision. They want to do what the other guy did that was successful so they can be successful. So I'm going to copy what they're doing to find out that their version doesn't work for them or their vision. It just like, if I want to do what Brad's doing at his church, I'm going to copy that. But wait a minute, that didn't work for my folks. What I've learned too is when I moved to different towns, things I try at one church or was successful at in one town may not be successful in the other town. Doing the same exact thing. It just doesn't work out like that because you have different people, different demographics, and you cannot do the same thing at the same place. That's why it's so important that we walk in the Spirit of God. We have to. I think the biggest thing for me and my ministry and meeting people and winning people to the Lord is I have to be sensitive to the Holy Spirit, which means there's times that I will feel like I just need to go somewhere. So I go drive and I don't know where I'm going. Like, Lord, I don't know where I'm going. Give me an idea. What in the world? So that's Marcus. What in the world? I never said that till Marcus moves to Pigeon Forge. I'm like, what in the world? So then I get somewhere and I realize as I start talking to someone, this is why. And we start these conversations. I met a guy the other day. Paula had to go to the drugstore, Walgreens, there right in downtown Pigeon Forge. So I'm like, I'll go in with you. Because I feel like rather than sit in the car, we're a light if we get out of the car. We're a light if we get out of the church. We're a light if we get out of our house. And we live in a dark world. So I try to take every opportunity I can. And you can ask my wife, anybody that knows me, I get out where people are so my light can shine. So I got out Walgreens and she's going to the back and I'm not shopping or anything. I'm just looking for people. So I see one lady and I speak to her and I'm like, hey, you working hard, aren't you? And she's like, I'm trying hard not to work. I said, I heard that, you know, is that good? And this other guy said, hey, you working hard too? And I thought they might be related. I didn't realize it was actually her son. It was weird because he works for Coca-Cola and she works for Walgreens, but they were in the same store at the same time. And so I said, you working hard? He said, I'm working smarter, not harder. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I like that answer so good. You win. Can I buy you lunch? He said, what? I said, yeah, I'm going to buy you lunch. You come to my church Sunday, I'm going to take you to lunch. He said, you serious? I said, absolutely. Now, here's what we don't know. The Holy Spirit had already went ahead of me and prepared Dijon, like the mustard, had already prepared his heart. He had already been thinking about, I need to find a church. He was unchurched. He's got a 3-year-old little boy, and he came to church that Sunday. We took him, his girlfriend, 3-year-old little boy, out to lunch, and we have created a wonderful friendship with them. Marcus, he was there Sunday, wasn't he? And it's just fantastic, but it's because I got out of the car. So it has to be like my vision. I can't just do everything as someone else does. I got to think for myself and do for myself as well and be the very best of that I can be. So everybody wants to row, though, it's already paid for them. Nobody wants to do the hard work and venturing through the forest to create their own path because no one wants to be a failure. My wife will tell you, I don't mind failing. I fail a lot. But when you try different ventures, you're going to find that you fail. But I feel like you're only a failure if you stop trying new things. And Kenny and Margaret, they were in Clarksville with me for 7 years. They know I'm going to try different things, and a lot of things won't work. But we got to keep trying. Always try and try and try to do different things. Our vision for the church doesn't have to be complicated. People want to complicate what they do. And they because we don't understand certain constructs, I guess is the word I don't want to use, but we don't understand certain ways that a church may be seeing growth or how they're doing their outreach, whatever, we avoid any of it. It doesn't have to be complicated. Your vision is your vision. You can make it what you want it to do, but it needs to be your vision. Think for yourself. I don't know too many pastors that share with me, hey, let me tell you this vision I've got for my church. It's usually we borrow from somebody else and we try to steal this idea and that idea. What has God said to you about your people and your church? So your vision, don't make it complicated. Make it simple and make it fit you, who you are. It's like trying to put a round peg in a square hole or a round square, doing that. So make sure it's your vision. Something else I want you to remember is you're not in this by yourself. One of the things that I'm going to brag on Brad a little bit that he taught us years ago is the idea of a coach. Get a coach. Now, I know that's a stagecoach, right? So, like, how does that connect? Because the word coach comes from the definition of getting you from point A to point B. So it's not necessarily somebody screaming at you like, come on, get off your lazy rear end. Let's get this thing going. And like I would Kip if I was his coach. I would be on him all the time. That's not what it is. It's simply transporting you from A to B. So if you're in your church and you're like, hey, I want to get to this place, which is a start too. You have to look at where you want to be. One of the things that we do at North American Ministries, we give reports and, you know, what's your goals for the next 3 months, the next 6 months, the next year? Where do you want to be? The other night we was riding to church and I told Paul, I said, look, let me share with you some of my goals. And this was probably a month or so ago. And I said, I'd really like to be in the 70s mark in the fall. And she, like most wives, said, are you crazy? Where are you going to come up with 70 people? We don't have but like 30 or 40 right now. There's no way we're going to be at 70 by the fall because we got to get through the summer slump, right? You know, y'all would all think that too. Like that's just what, but when you have a goal and you want to reach that goal, you've got to have somebody that will help coach you to get to that 70 mark. That'll just encourage you and pray for you and just be some ears for you to help you get from here to here. Because when you are trying to get to that next mark, numerically, whatever it may be, you need somebody to encourage you because you're going to face some setbacks. Some setbacks I faced was we thought it'd be a great idea to do financial peace on Wednesday nights. So we started that. We use it as an outreach. We advertise on Facebook, you know, all this kind of stuff. We had people sign up in the church. And on Wednesday nights, my wife said, I'll do that class. You can do the auditorium class. There was one Wednesday night. She had one couple and another lady in her class. And I had no one in my class. I had Josh McKinnish. He's a guy that's blind. He plays a piano at the Titanic. And he came in there and I said, Josh, you know, it's like five after. Do you just want to like sit here with me? I'm going to pray for a while or you can go to Paula's class. And he said, well, I've kind of been thinking about the money lately, so I think I'll go to her class. So the blind guy gets up, leaves my class, goes to her class. After about 20 minutes, I'm finished praying. I'm like, I might as well join him too if I can. You know, so it's discouraging sometimes when you're trying to get to a certain point in your ministry or a certain number. You're like, I want to build our congregation. So because I don't know if you know it or not, but there's a lot of pressure when you plant a church because everybody asks, how many are you running now? Nobody ever says, how many are you saved? Nobody does. No one. Then you can ask me now since I'm, or you go up to other church planters, hey, how many had saved lately? But everybody says, how many are you running now? When I first moved to Clarksville, within the first year I was there, one of the Tennessee board members asked me, I hadn't been there a year. So when you go in self-supporting, I'm like, I haven't been here a year yet. You got to give me some time. But everybody wants to know, how many you running? So we do put expectations on ourselves, and I honestly do put numbers that I'd like to see our church at by this time. And so by the fall, I wanted to have 70 people. July, the first Sunday, we had 72. So I'm like, okay, that's just, you know, a bunch of kids going to camp, whatever. Second week of July, we had 72. I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird. The more people are showing up and it's kind of funny. The third week of July, which I was going to the Nationals, we had 63. And Marcus was preaching. You know, you think they're not going to show up to hear Marcus, right? Yeah, but they came. So our congregation, we're already, I mean, almost right where I wanted to be for the fall, ahead of schedule. So what that tells me is sometimes God really wants to get you somewhere quicker than you were even thinking about getting there. But what helps is having people that will coach you. I have so many friends and people that I talk to that get me from A to B. I'm telling you, I think it's a tremendous help. Now, I've not always been a reader, okay? But the last year and a half or so, Brad has really influenced me. I'm trying to read a lot more. And I'm finding if I'm going to keep withdrawing from myself and helping people, I've got to make some deposits in my life and in my heart and my mind. And the more I read, the more I'm able to deposit in other people. So finding them, keeping them is a book Brad probably gave me. It says churches that are effectively reaching people for Christ see the needs of the unchurched, establish ministries that allow the church to be present in the community, and have a process by which they are able to draw these unchurched people into the safety of Christ and a local church. Now, I want to take this step by step and go through this, and hopefully it can help you a little bit understand reaching the unchurched. One of the things that if our church is to effectively reach people for Christ, we must see the needs of the unchurched. Because most churches don't see the needs of the unchurched. And so when I began ministry, my whole deal was I want to reach the unchurched people. And I have it backwards, I know, a little bit. Like, we disciple people, you got to teach and train them. But I had such a passion to reach lost people and to help change this idea of how typical church is. Because I've had family members in my immediate family that was lost. My parents have been praying for them. I wanted to see them. So I was just like gung-ho. We need to get people saved. You know, we've got to do this. So look at the needs of the unchurched. What are they? These are not from the book. These are just things I've written down. Some of the needs of the unchurched. I think folks that are unchurched, they need to be loved. So if we know that lost people want to be loved, then we've got to figure out how can we love the lost people. What can we do to show them that we love them? Are we meeting the needs of the unchurched? What are we doing as a church? So we need to ask ourselves in our local church, what are we doing to show people outside our walls that we love them? Do you know that the church has not a good reputation with people outside the church? Most people that don't go to church don't really care for churches. And you know what I tell them? I get it. I have a hard time with it myself sometimes. I agree with it. I understand everything you're frustrated about. I've been there too. So I don't like it as well, but sometimes I don't like myself, but I have to deal with me, right? You can't run from yourself. To learn about God's forgiveness, what they need, ask ourselves, how are we implementing the gospel as we present ourselves as a church to the community? How are we getting the gospel to those people that we say we love? Listen, if we say we love the people that's lost and we really do love them, what are we doing to show them that love? If I say I love my wife and I never tell her or express that to her, she's going to start doubting it. So the people in our community don't need to doubt whether or not we love them. I feel like when we go and plant a church, if we ever removed ourselves from that community, there ought to be a vacancy. The people in the community ought to miss us. I loved it when I lived in Clarksville. I loved being part of the events downtown. They would call us and ask us at times, hey, will you volunteer? One night they called and asked me, would I MC a movie night out of the lawn over by the base, out that, by Kenwood, that park there. And so I got to MC a movie night for the community, for the city, because they liked me. They liked me, and I loved them, and they wanted me to do that. We got to find out, how are we showing our community that we love them and implementing the gospel as we present it to our community? You look at the example of Jesus. He went into areas and he started healing people. He fed people. They loved him. So I'm just trying to look at what the example Jesus did, and I want to do good to people. I want to give to people. That's why I don't know how much we spend on meals. Kenny can tell you, he was my treasurer for years. I would take people out to eat all the time. I would try to pour into them. No telling how many t-shirts we gave away. I mean, thousands of dollars in t-shirts, but it was free advertisement too. I would spend, if you're going to spend money on advertisement, pour it into your people. Let them wear your church shirts. Advertise everywhere they go in town, and then people are going to start saying, yeah, I saw that shirt in Walmart the other day. And it's good advertising dollars, but you're also telling your church people you love it. And then when you have visitors come, you give them a free t-shirt as well. I bought 24 ball caps the other day. Just a summer cap, you know, got the holes in the back, had it embroidered, the church name. So Sunday before last, I told Marcus, I said, let's give all these guys a cap, you know, and I even had Wheezy. She was asking me for one. I was like, hey, I want a cap too. Louise, you know, so I gave her a cap. Yeah, here, I got one for you too. I didn't realize women wear ball caps as well. But even the guys in our church, they love the fact that I'm giving to them, because we have to teach them to give so they'll give when they're out. And I tell our folks in church, if you see somebody you feel like God's put on your heart to help them and you don't have the money, help them and I'll reimburse you. Because I want our people to have the ability to give and help people in our community that's lost. And they also want to be led in discipleship. They want to spend time with you. Because to me, discipleship, if you spend time with people, you're discipling them. I mean, if you're doing what God wants you to do, spend time with them. I took Josh fishing the other day. Now, you want to talk about a trying time? Take someone blind fishing in a boat where they have to cast toward the bank and get caught up in trees. And I taught him how to fish with a bait caster. I've got him on my phone videoed when he learned how to do it right without backlashing. It's the coolest thing. You know what he desires more than anything else? Time. He wants to spend time with me. Other guys in the church are wanting to spend time with me, and they want to spend time with you too. Anybody that will listen to them, they want to talk because they have a story. Mark will tell you about a guy we got. I met his wife in a restaurant, of all things, and she said, why did you move here? And I said, I moved here so I could reach the lost people in this community. And she said, that's interesting. I just got saved. By the way, you got to realize, too, you need to talk to everybody about the Lord. Everybody, everywhere you go, everybody. Don't ever let an opportunity pass you that you've got a waitress or at a gas pump. If somebody ever says, how you doing today, sir? Nay, you just messed up. You know, because I'm fishing to talk to you about the Lord. I'm not kidding. Every opportunity, everywhere you go, is an opportunity to share Jesus. So I said to this lady, the Lord brought us here, and she said, well, I just got saved, and I'm looking for a church. I'm like, this is great. And I told her where the church at, gave her a card. We got ready to check out, and I was just telling my son-in-law's mother how good God's been to us and that I'm a favored child of God because he loves me, you know. Don't y'all feel that way too? God loves you. You're favored. And she says, well, nothing like that ever happens to me. Our waitress came. I said, I got her ticket. She said, somebody's already got yours. Like all of ours? Because it was like a lot. There was six or seven of us there that day. And like it was going to be a high. And she said, yeah, one of the ladies you talked to up front got it. I'm like, wow. So her husband ended up, and this is kind of cool how he's just longing for friendship. He hadn't been saved long. I was able to baptize him and their son and their faith. They were there Sunday too, weren't they? You see how it happens? These are people at like Walgreens, at the restaurant. That it's crazy, but they're longing for that connection. And thankfully, Marcus is connecting with William and Misty. 2 weeks ago, he invited them over to his house because that's what you have to do. You have to connect with people in your church. And I'll go on with that a little bit later on too. So established ministries that allow the church to be present in your community. This is really simple. It's going to be wherever you are. These are just some things that I try to get involved in. Kenny and Margaret will tell you. Armin will tell you. Nursing homes. You're not going to see people come to your church from nursing homes. It's just what God told us we need to do. Like take care of those people in the nursing home. Go sing. Opportunities. You say, well, COVID, we can't get in. Go sing at their windows. We used to go down the hallways. We didn't even go in their rooms. Just singing down the hallways and be creative. Think of ways that when they say, well, you can't do this. Well, what about outside the window? Can we do something to somebody to be a blessing? We just said, we're not going to do anything because the guidelines have restricted us to certain things. But there's other ways to do things. So think for yourself. When they say you can't, say we can. So get into your schools. You say, well, they won't let us go in there. Look, we've been invited to go inside the schools right by our church, by the administrator, and we're going to be praying in our public school hallways before school starts on that Monday. And we're also doing a back-to-school bash where we're inviting people to come in. So get into the schools, get into the hospitals, find out what you can do. Great ministries in the hospitals is just doing some goodie bags with some coloring books and gift cards. If you've got a hospital that's got a restaurant in it, buy gift cards to that restaurant, put it in there, and then give it to those people and say, hey, we want to be a blessing to you. I'd never invite people to church at the hospital. I'm not there to them. I'm there to be an encouragement to them. I'm there to share God's love to them. And without fail, everywhere, they will say, oh, why are you doing this? And we say, well, we just want to be a servant to you. And well, is this a church group? I say, yes. Will you pray with us? I mean, it happens. Now, we're not doing that to bring people to our church. We're just doing it because that's what God says we're supposed to do. Care for those people that are hurting. And sometimes you got to do what God says and not look at. I tell Paula, we don't ever need to look at the results of events that God said we need to do. So if you're a deacon here and your pastor got this harebrained idea, don't look at it and say, Pastor, we didn't get anybody here that Sunday. We spent $10,000 for that event, but it didn't bring anybody in. Well, you're not responsible for the results. God is. We're responsible to do what He's asked us to do. So if He asks us to spend $2,000 on a VBS and only five kids show up, you don't say, well, we don't want to do that next year. This didn't go over very well. Well, to those five kids, it went over real well. Or to that person that got invitation, it went over real well with them because they realized, I need to get back in church. So you're not responsible. So don't look at it and say, well, that was a failure. So get involved in your neighborhood events. That's where it's totally different here in Pigeon Forge and Clarksville or anywhere else I've lived. Youth events draw people in too. If you have any kind of like VBS stuff, that draws people in. And when they're there, love on them. Do some block parties. Whatever you can do. Like, honestly, I have to try to be creative. Where I'm at now, we did a night of comedy. I had the guy from the Comedy Barn. Anybody ever been to the Comedy Barn in Pigeon Forge? Brad, you ever been to that? Oh, we'll go next time you come up. I got him to come. I got another comedian to come in. It was a total flop. Seriously. But it's developed a relationship between me and Kyle, who's the ventriloquist guy at the Comedy Barn. And the last text or message I got from him was, hey, when can we do breakfast again? And he's unchurched right now. So, you know, that's something I'm still working on. Sometimes it don't develop as fast as I'd like for it to, but we've got to continue working with that. And the last one says, have a process by which they are able to draw these unchurched people into the safety of Christ and the local church. So have a process to get folks into your church. Now, how does that happen? Well, I mentioned earlier, establish a friendship with them. Dijon, he liked me to start with because I joked with him about, you know, working hard and trying hard not to work and can I buy your lunch, and I tried to develop that. Then when we went and ate, I sat by the three-year-old. I cut the three-year-old's pizza up. You know what? When you pay attention to their little kids, it means the world to them. There's little things that you can do. I didn't sit with the daddies and the mamas. I sat by a three-year-old little boy, cut his pizza. Now, I'm the pastor. I'm the church planner. Surely I can sit at the end of the table and carry on the conversation, right? Not that day. I'm the pizza cutter, get pizza on you. Now I'm OCD about food and stuff too, and this little boy, like, he was a wreck. Gene, you know. But sometimes it's not about that. And I'm learning too, God can replace my pants and shirt, because I would probably just like, yeah. But they're still here. Because the friendship, the relationship. So you gotta have a process. How am I gonna bring these people in? I just try to be friendly to people. I try to entertain them by buying their lunch. I offer to buy so many people's lunch. Very few people take me up on it, but I offer it every day. Like, hey, come to church, let me buy you lunch. Well, you want to grab a steak? I got a guy working at church today. When he came out, I said, look, you come to church, I'll buy you a steak. We'll go get a ribeye. Because folks don't think we're going to spend good money on them. They're thinking we're going to take them to get a hamburger at McDonald's, which that's a lot now too, but tell them you'll go get them a ribeye. For real? If that's what you want, we'll go do it. Because I love ribeyes. So don't be cheap. When you're developing a relationship, you say, well, I can't afford it. Then save up and do it. And not a lot of people are going to take you up on it anyway. They honestly won't. They just, I don't have time today, Pastor. I'll get you another day, whatever. Other thing you can do is pray for them. And pray for you as you go out too. Gene and I, we worked together. We'd pray in the mornings for the Lord to help us to find people that's in need of Him. I mean, that was our goal. When we go out of the church, we wanted to be a light in a dark world, and that was just every day. And so when we prayed, we got out, we started looking for people. And that's what we really need to pray. God, help me think for myself. Help me look around. Where's the darkest? I mean, if you see somebody crying on the sidewalk, it might be a sign they need some prayer. You might be a Christian. You might could go offer to pray for them. It might make a difference. Think for yourself. If you see hurting people, you do realize we have the solution for hurting people. We have the answer that they're looking for. But too many church people don't take the time to think for themselves and notice there's somebody hurting. I have the answer that can help them. So, not only do you pray for them, check on them. Get their numbers, text them. Hey, you gonna be there Sunday? If they're not there, hey, I missed you Sunday. Drew, is a guy that we check on a lot. I met Drew at a restaurant. What's the name of that place? Like Paul Bunyan's Pizza Place or something. It's where they throw axes. So Paul and Kyla, they planned this secret dinner for me one night where we throw axes. Y'all ever done that? Anybody ever went and done that? That is so much fun to do that. So our waiter, he comes up to the table, and he's bald guy. He's got the gauges and the tattoos, and he's got like an axe tattooed on his hand right here. And he's like, so what do y'all want? And all this kind of stuff. And, you know, he's kind of buff, like a big beard. And so he teaches Paula how to throw this axe. He said, if you don't want to do this, you won't have to pay. She said, okay, I'm not going to like it, so I'm not going to pay. So by the time he spends like 2 or 3 minutes showing her how to throw this axe, she's hooked. She ends up beating me. I never won a game of the axe throwing. She beat me. Kyla beat me. I'm telling you, I couldn't win. I was always second place, which is first loser. So we started developing a little friendship with Drew. Let me tell you what his first question to me was. Will folks in your church look down on me because I got gauges and tattoos? I said, dude, I want you to be my worship pastor. What are you talking about? And he said, for real? You see, there's people that's unchurched that needs a little hope that God would use them, no matter what their past or what they look like. Because you may not like how they look, but the people they're trying to win don't care how they look. They just want somebody to love them. And Drew's becoming really good friends of ours, developing a relationship. He's also a semi-professional wrestler. And if you'd like to see videos of him wrestling, Marcus went this past week. Redneck, man, it's good. You do believe in wrestling, right? What I'm saying, there's people all over this world that need somebody to love them where they're at in their life. And that's what we're doing. Develop a relationship. Check on them. Text them. If you're friends with me on Facebook, go back and look what Drew wrote about our church the other day. It's amazing. And then entertain them some more. Don't just take them out once. Say, look, we're going to do this every Sunday. I may not be able to buy yours every week, but we'd love for you to hang out with us. Like, be a part of our family. And when you ask someone else's family to be a part of your family, it makes them feel more like family. You'll be amazed at how it works. You say, well, we don't eat out on Sunday. Then put more water in the soup, invite them to your house. It's okay. You say, well, my house is dirty. Well, clean it. That's simple. It probably needs a good scrubbing. Look, God has given us the resources that we have to use for Him. You don't have a house to live in. You have a house to use for God. You don't have a car to drive around. You have a car to pick people up for church. It gets aggravating too sometimes. Brad can tell you, I had some, the blind guy that he obviously can't drive to work. And there's been times that we've had to get up from eating dinner. We had dinner on the lake one night out in Douglas Lake. We sat down, we get the menu, we get our sweet teas coming, and the sweet tea gets there, and I get a phone call from Josh that says, I need a ride. I can't get Uber, there's no taxi. Will you pick me up? I'm standing outside back of the Titanic waiting for somebody to pick me up. I'm like, we gotta go, you know? So we left our dinner on the lake to go pick up Josh. I sat and waited on Josh for an hour. He's the only blind guy I've punched in the face. And no, he didn't see it coming. Josh is one of the best guys. Now, y'all think it might be bad joking with him. That I can joke with him. He's becoming one of my dear friends because we talk like really close. We spend a lot of time together. Do you know that's what people are wanting? They want somebody in church they can tell their deepest problems to. Josh tells me stuff he's never told anybody. He can't believe the stuff we talk about. I can't believe you and I are talking about. That's what they want. And you need to build a relationship. You say, why is my church not successful? Who are you pouring yourself into? Why can't we reach people? Who are you pouring yourself into? You find some people you can just love on and you watch it. They will come because they love you. So entertain them. Take them, do whatever you can do. Have church activities designed for lost people. Anticipate lost people coming or unchurched people coming. The last one we had, Drew brought his girlfriend. She's been out of church. She had been hurt at church. She didn't want to come to church. He got her convinced to come to a Sunday night barbecue. We played cornhole, but when we play cornhole at the church now, I've changed it up completely. Here's what we do. If we're going to play cornhole, everybody's name goes into a hat, and we pull out different names. So you don't pick your partner. It's randomly picked out. So you're standing by somebody that you don't know that well, and you're playing your partner, somebody you don't know that well. So we eliminate all the favorites and all the, I'm best friends with this person, I want to play with him. It doesn't matter. You're not going to play then. You know, so we, people get to know each other. Oh, by the way, the kids play as well. So the adults can get to know the kids at church. We don't have that many right now. So we've had like 30 or 40 at our events on Sunday nights where we do cornhole and stuff. So people are starting to know each other. I feel like our kids are already disconnected from church because we send them to the back rooms for children's church and stuff. They don't even know who the adults are. They don't hear us pray. It's all that. So I'm trying to do events where our kids can know our adults and they can enjoy the fellowship together. I think it's important myself that these kids look up to us and want to be us. So anyway, have activities where lost people don't feel pressured. Like you can bring them in the church. We do events on Sunday nights that we want people to come in and they're not going to feel like they're weird, you know. So invite. If you're a pastor, preach on evangelism with passion. Like Armin used to say, you've got multiple references, multiple sermons, multiple points, but you always say the same thing. Win people to Christ. Win people to Christ. So I often preach to people about evangelism, how it is our responsibility to win people to Christ. If you're not preaching on evangelism to your people often, it's probably a reason why they're not passionate about winning people. They need to see lost people where they are in this world. And that we are the solution. Jesus said it's up to us. And if we're not doing it, so why aren't preachers preaching more? If the greatest need in the church is more people or whatever, or people getting saved, then why aren't we preaching? Like, you know, y'all remember Billy Sunday? Anybody ever see the video of him preaching? I know there's one out somewhere on, you can watch him preaching, and man, he preached with fire. So, but have passion when you're telling people about, give them some illustrations where you've been witnessing to people and some of the stories you've been told and how important it is. You know, I don't have any stories. Then do more of it. Spend a couple of weeks witnessing to people every day and you'll have some stories that you can share with your people when you preach on evangelism with passion so they can see that. Your church is not going to be passionate about what you're not passionate about. So you must be passionate. Look, when's the last time you shed tears from your pulpit about lost people and over lost people? You say, well, I don't think that's important. Well, you're wrong. It is important. It's very important. And we as church leaders need to be passionate about what God has done in our hearts. Don't forget where you would be without Jesus. So be passionate when you stand before your people. Get you a story. Tell about how you've witnessed to people. Now, my closing thoughts here. This is where it gets good. Make changes for the unchurched inside the church. Don't be so churchy in your church. The last few churches I've been a part of, we don't do a lot of funeral flowers. That's what I call them, funeral flowers. The only place I go into a building like that and see flowers is at a funeral or a church. You don't see anybody having flowers anywhere else. That's like from the 60s or so. I don't know when they started that, but so I don't do flowers anymore. I just looked at it, and people don't really, they don't, it's not good memories of a bouquet of flowers, especially men. And I'm trying to reach men. Honestly, I connect with men. I try not to connect with women out about because I don't want them to think something crazy. So I try to, that's why when I went into Walgreens, there was a lady there. I spoke to her, and Dijon was here, so I connected with him. I just don't want anything to be said. Oh, the pastor's after these women, whatever. I don't want that. Women love the flowers. I'm trying to build a church on men. If I can get the man, I'm going to have the wife and the children. So I don't really do flowers in my church. I'm not saying you don't need to, whatever. If you got a florist that loves decorating like funerals, go right ahead. Put them on the casket and put them on the side, just like they do in funerals and all that stuff. Think about unchurched people. They don't care about your flowers and all that stuff. So I really get rid of them. Take some pride in your facilities. There are churches today that haven't been touched in the 70s, but everybody's house has been updated. We update our bathrooms. We paint the paneling. We get rid of the rose carpet. You know, like, why can't we spend some of that money in the bank on our facilities and create ownership among your people and some pride in your church? I told them earlier today, or yesterday, we started building a fireplace outside our church where we're at. And we had money donated. One of our board members gave a lot of money to help us with a fireplace outside because we're in the Smoky Mountains and people love building fires and that kind of stuff. So when you walk in the door, before you get in, to the right, we've got an awning here, but there's going to be a fireplace two wood boxes, and I'm putting chairs up out there. I've also got the awning where I've got picnic tables. I get there usually an hour early, and folks are already at church. They beat us there. And then some nights, you ask Marcus, it's an hour and a half, 2 hours after church, and folks are still out there talking. Create an environment for people that they can fellowship. They do take ownership, and they look at it as mine. I have a lady there as well today or yesterday. She wanted to know if she could set up, and because they make balloons and stuff, and she's got this new thing she's doing. Hey, can I use the church? Absolutely. We're using our facilities for everything in the world I can think of for people outside our church to come in. If they want to use our building, use our building. Doesn't cost you anything. We're having a neighborhood homeowner association. They asked, could they use a building? I said, absolutely. This is what it costs. I said, it don't cost you anything. I said, matter of fact, when you get there, we'll have coffee and donuts for you too. Well, why would you do that for us? You know, I'm like, because we want whoever comes to know that our church loves them and cares about them. Well, what's that going to cost? We'll write you a check. I don't want a check. I want to be able to be a blessing to people. And we've got to train our people. This is what we do as a church. We know we want to be a blessing to people so they will look. And we don't do it so God will send us people. We just do what we know God says we should do, and He takes care of people. So when folks come in, like, oh, we got some visitors today. Where'd they come from? Well, probably 3 or 4 weeks ago when you did what you were supposed to do. God's just blessing you for that. And even if you don't have them, they may be going to church somewhere else. So just do what you're supposed to do and don't look at the results, and you won't get discouraged. And be simple too in your language and terms you use at church. Don't be so churchy. Like, we got to get out of that churchy. Lost people don't really use church terms very well. They don't even know what we're talking about. Make sure services flow smoothly. If you want to reach people, make sure it flows. Don't have like 10 minutes of dead time, like you're trying to figure out where the ushers are and where the offering plates are, and is somebody singing a special, or what are we doing right now? I don't even know. Well, it looks like we're going to have a change. I don't know what's going on. I know what's going on. Marcus got a message Sunday to remind him that he was supposed to speak Sunday. That's just how we roll it now. I mean, it's everybody knows what's going on. Set it up so you don't fail. If you don't set it up, things will happen. So we try our best to get it organized. So make sure it flows smoothly. So when you do have visitors, you don't look like you're unprepared. Fellowships, comfortable for outsiders to fit in with the church. When you do fellowships, make sure they feel comfortable when they come. What I mean by that is make sure they know where everything's at. When you see somebody that's new to a fellowship, explain to them where everything's at, what we're doing. If you're going to do something, go to them specifically, say, hey, we're about to do this. Just make sure you would think like if you were them entering somewhere for the first time, how it would be. And connections are extremely important. Now, this is my last slide here I'm going to show you. I want to ask you right here, y'all know what this is, right? This used to be popular in the 70s. Anybody remember that in the 70s? What's it called? Does anybody know? String art? Yeah. So can you tell by this picture here which nail was driven in that piece of wood last? No. Can you tell which nail went in first? Can you tell which nails secured the most in that group of nails? Can you tell which nail is going to fall out first? It's exactly the picture of the church, how it should be. Each of those nails represent the first person that got into the church, and it also represents one of the last people that was in the church. It represents the visitors that come to your church. But they all should be connected just as strongly as the one that's been there forever. How's that going to happen? It's going to happen by us building bridges and tying strings to them. And the more your church people, the more you will tie to those people, the better off you're going to be. The harder it's going to be for them to fall out. Because even if they want to get out of the wood, they're still connected to people in the church. And it's going to be much easier for them to get back into the wood where they need to be. When I saw that picture today, I thought, man, that's how it should be at our churches. We should be tied into people. And I want everybody to be connected together. I don't want the kids to be one area. And I mean, I do in children's church, but I don't want them to be disconnected from our church. I don't want there to be older people and younger people. I want us to be together, fellowship together, be one. And I want visitors to come in and feel like they're just as part of somebody that's been there forever. I don't want folks who've been there forever think they've got seniority in the church, because I don't believe in that. I don't think you'll have seniority because I've been in this church 50 years. My daddy, I don't care. Your daddy's dead now. He's not here. He's not walking with the Spirit of God like you are, like I am. You think the Holy Spirit's going to leave that daddy 50 years ago, do the same thing today he did 50 years ago? You think that dead daddy's going to lead during COVID? Absolutely not. So we have to change our thought process and think for ourselves. We're not living in the 60s, 70s. We're not even in COVID anymore. We're outside COVID. So allow God to use you. Allow God to direct you differently than anybody else is going. And don't worry about if you're not successful in the events that you do, because God is responsible for that.